Water, Wisconsin, and the Mercury Cycle, a production of the University of Wisconsin Water Resources Institute, with funding provided by the United States Geological Survey.
This is Jim Hurley of the University of Wisconsin Water Resources Institute. One of the benefits of these studies that we're doing on mercury is that they allow us to help predict what might occur in the future under different scenarios. For instance, ecological restoration may be affected by the fact that mercury that's in that ecosystem may be mobilized in different ways during the restoration. Mercury researchers now know that when we flood an area, when we create a reservoir, we end up mobilizing mercury that's in the organic layer of the soils that we flood. So we have to be careful when we decide to take these adaptation strategies that we consider the complexities of a contaminant like mercury. Here's David Krabanoff to talk about some of the ecological restoration projects that the United States Geological Survey is currently working on.
One of the current focuses of my research, and I hope it will be a sustained effort moving forward for the remainder of my career, is looking at how mercury and the mercury issue interfaces with large ecosystem restoration efforts. I've been very fortunate that the USGS has given me the opportunity to work in three very different environments and three different ecosystems that are the focus of the largest ecosystem restoration efforts I think that our country has ever attempted, and those are specifically the Everglades of Florida, the California Bay Delta in the San Francisco region, and now, more recently, the Great Lakes. And in each case, it turns out mercury is a really significant issue that the ecosystem restoration planners and the decision makers to authorize those restoration projects need to be aware of and need to constantly be updated on about how the restoration may affect mercury levels in food webs in those three very well-known ecosystems. The real challenge for me and other mercury researchers in those environments is to try and provide a level of understanding such that we can provide credible and defensible conclusions from our research to help restoration planners and decision makers most effectively move forward with the ecosystem restoration programs, but also hopefully not let mercury become a showstopper for any one of them. So, for instance, in the Everglades of Florida, what we learned is that two major forces are driving mercury contamination in the Everglades of Florida, and one at least has a great deal to do with the restoration of that ecosystem, and that is sulfate that comes from the drainage canals into the Everglades and is one of the key factors that sustains mercury methylation in South Florida. As it turns out, the Everglades are situated such that on the upper part of the Everglades watershed is a very important and very economically viable agricultural growing ground for much of our nation's vegetables and fruit. But it also turns out that that soil is very paupered in a number of essential nutrients, and so growing fruits and vegetables in this area requires the agricultural community to add a number of soil amendments. And one of the soil amendments that's added is sulfate. That sulfate, once applied to the soil, is very mobile and basically follows the water that drains off the fields and enters the canals and then down into the Everglades. So wherever that water discharges in the Everglades, we end up with greater amounts of methylmercury forming. That is a typical example of an environmental issue meeting headlong with an economic resource and food need of our country. So at the present time, we are working to further understand mercury-sulfate relationships in South Florida, trying to help the decision makers on the restoration of the Everglades understand the issue, help them to come up with solutions where the restoration of this very, very unique ecosystem on the worldscape can proceed to be so-called restored, and yet we don't continue to expose wildlife and humans to unsafe levels of methylmercury. The other two examples that we've been involved with, one in the Delta of California, where the Sacramento River flows into the San Francisco Bay, is a little bit different. It's another very large ecosystem restoration program where they are attempting to re-establish more natural conditions in that delta. Many of those areas have been drained and are now under agricultural plow. The desire is now to turn those areas back to natural wetlands and to provide more habitat and better water quality for the region. As it turns out, when you put these areas that are currently drained back towards wetland simply by flooding them, it causes a very quick and very dramatic reaction. In fact, it's what I would say is the best way to make methylmercury of any process that I'm aware of, and that is to take drain soil and flood it again. Now, that's not to say that restoring that area shouldn't be the thing that we all want to do, but the challenge lies for the researchers to develop strategies that would allow these wetlands to be restored, but not produce unsafe levels of methylmercury. My research team has begun to work with California researchers to help provide that necessary information. How can that restoration in the California Delta move forward without producing unsafe levels of methylmercury? And lastly, in the Great Lakes, a relatively new project that our team here has begun working on, the discoveries there are more like where we were at in northern Wisconsin 20 years ago. We know a number of the Great Lakes, in fact, the majority of the Great Lakes, have high levels of mercury in sport fish. We don't necessarily understand the source and the cycling pathways of what's causing that right now, and it's largely because the Great Lakes are a significant step up in terms of complexity and difficulty to study because of their immense size and the limited number of opportunities that you actually have to go out on them and sample safely. We began that process this August of 2010, and we hope that it will be a sustained effort so that somewhere in the not-too-distant future will hopefully provide for the restoration planners and decision-makers on the Great Lakes restoration an understanding of how they can proceed with the overall goal of restoring much of the habitat of the Great Lakes to a former condition, but not result in higher levels of methylmercury in the food webs.
This podcast was produced by Chris Bocast, that's me, for the University of Wisconsin Water Resources Institute, with funding provided by the United States Geological Survey. This podcast is public domain. Thanks for listening.